Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
All right. Welcome back, culture members, to another episode of The Culture's Money. I honestly don't remember which episode this is. I've been recording so much, but thank you guys for listening and everything like that. I am your host, Jamal Vito. Some of you may know me on other platforms as Leo Grand Prince, but however you know me, I hope that you know me to be an advocate for financial literacy, generational wealth, and entrepreneurship within the Black community. It's another good one. I feel like it's going to be with another young Black woman on the episode. Fellas, they just got y'all outnumbered at this point, and I'm here for it. And I ain't going to stop it. Whoever comes on and blesses y'all is who I'm going to bring on to the show. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Miss Lanice.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. How was your, we'll start by, how was your holiday yesterday? How was Juneteenth?
It was good. I was trying to focus more on purchasing from Black businesses yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I made a couple purchases. One of my old assistants, she is now an entrepreneur, I would say. And so she launched her business at noon yesterday. And so I went to try to support her, and she actually sold out a lot of stuff in like 30 or 45 minutes.
That was
kind of cool. Yeah. So I was just being very intentional yesterday about supporting Black businesses online, especially after the pandemic. Some businesses are now strictly online, or we're not used to the e-commerce space as much as they are now. So I was just trying to support a couple businesses that I know have really good product.
Okay. Outside of the known businesses, of course, that you know, did you find it hard to find like Black-owned businesses or anything like that? Is it hard to locate them as a in reference to like websites or social media platforms or anything like that?
In my opinion, yes, they are hard to find. And even though Instagram is doing a really good job at promoting the space for entrepreneurship and creators, I think the issue that I am finding is some brands don't have their own personal real estate, meaning they don't have websites. Mm-hmm. Some brands don't have really good customer service, meaning it's no way to get in contact with somebody if I might be having a problem with trying to purchase through Instagram. They don't accept DMs. Some brands or some businesses have private pages. So I just feel like it should be a class or maybe some type of some form of Instagram etiquette that someone needs to offer, because that I think you end up losing the dollar. On top of some of the product that I have experienced, like when Instagram, like pretty much probably about 5-7 years ago, before we had the business pages and stuff like that, like it was a really bad product. I just don't think a lot of people were sourcing properly. And sometimes with Black businesses, the prices are substantially higher because we are ordering lower minimums, in my opinion. So it causes the price to be higher.
You hit so much on that.
I know. I was like, am I rambling?
No. You hit by that. I mean, you hit so much that like, I don't even know which direction I want to go. I want to ask you this. And this is why I love when the conversations go organic, because it kind of feeds what I need to touch on. You touched on a bunch of stuff. One, it's funny you mentioned the whole not being able to contact the business, because there were two young ladies who were kind of having a disagreement based off what you were just saying about customer service on Twitter. And the one girl said that she was in the ladies' DM because they didn't have an email address in for them to contact, which I was like, okay, how do y'all feel about that?
And how do you even have Instagram without an email address?
Exactly my point. I think she was saying the business didn't have an email, but right. I couldn't get under there. But she was like, so she was in the DM. The customer service thing that you were talking about, I'm definitely on that. And you wouldn't, Black businesses, I find, sometimes have a lot of pride, like, because I'm a consultant and I've I do mostly operational financial consulting, but I can do also customer service because I'm an entrepreneur and I've done that. And I know what it looks like to offer decent quality customer service. But I find sometimes the brands don't want to spend the money because they feel like it's not a good return on investment. So give me your opinion on all that about not having a proper way to get in contact with an email or a telephone number. And do you feel it's okay for customers to jump in businesses' DMs or, you know, elaborate more on the business pages being private? Like, what's your foresight on that?
I think we need to be a little bit more honest with where we are in the space. And so when, as an entrepreneur or as a small business owner, when you enter into the space of your small business and you're using Instagram as a platform, it should be a way that I should be able to communicate with you. Mm-hmm. That should be the first thing. And so if it isn't, then you should have alternative options. Like, you're not running a business that nothing is ever going to happen, because even in large businesses, they have things that might happen. You need customer service. I think a lot of times, even for myself, we think that we can handle it, or we are just not honest with where we are in the business structure. So in the beginning stages of business, we might can't afford $1,000 a week or $500 a week to a virtual assistant, or, you know what I mean? Just like an idea of something that you can outsource your customer service. You might have to use your cell phone or get an additional line on your cell phone to receive calls, or dedicate a specific email to your emails. To your customers, so that you know when these emails come through, this is business. And I think with a lot of that, we aren't honest with the space that we are already in, and leave room for us to grow and scale.
Okay. I want to dive more into what you're saying, because there was a lot there that I feel like the listeners should get. But first, let's tell them a little bit more about you before we go into that. So give us a little bit of background on the things you do and all that.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's so funny because, like, right now in this space that I'm in a very transitionary space.
Oh, that's good. So, I love that. It's all about the journey with these interviews. So that's even better.
Yeah. So I pretty much started my entrepreneurial career. Well, I've been a prior entrepreneur all my life. When I was in elementary school, I used to write poems for like Valentine's Day or Mother's Day or Christmas and stuff. And my mother was a teacher, so she had laminating machines. So I would.
That does not surprise me. Not to cut you off, but if y'all don't follow her on Twitter, she, and I can relate to this being someone who likes philosophy, she has a very philosophical vibe to her tweets. And the fact that she writes poetry kind of correlates to that.
Yes. So it's in me to be poetic. I need to sit, like, right now in part of my transitionary space, I've written eBooks, but I want to really transition into some journaling and some real books. Not saying that eBooks aren't real, but the information is just kind of appetizer-ish, in my opinion, when you're doing eBooks as opposed to real published manuscript. But so I started out in entrepreneurship as a child, but as an adult in my adult journey, I was a hairstylist. So I was working at a credit card company for about 2 years, and I was very unfulfilled. And for part time, I was working for a girl in Baltimore who's now in LA, but I was a shampoo girl, and I did majority of her job. So I did majority of her work. So she was saying, you should go to hair school. You should at least do this. And I think you should do this professionally. And so I quit my job and worked for her full time, and then ended up working in a salon under an apprenticeship for 2 years, because I think you have to do like 24 months of an apprenticeship. I worked there for about 3 years, and then I opened my first salon in Charles Village in Baltimore. So that was actually 4th of July weekend of 2008.
I'm laughing because if you haven't heard some of that, but was seeing some of my tweets, you know, I consider at this point Charles Village to be the black Wall Street of Baltimore.
Yes.
That is where all the black majority of the prosperous, thriving black owned businesses, that's where we are, whether it be food, clothing. I've seen a couple of estheticians. Thank you, estheticians up there. To makeup artists, and I love that area because we're thriving there, and the fact that your salon was there is just so ironic.
Yeah, so I started there in 2008, and I was there for some years, and then in about 2013-ish, in about 2013, I opened a salon in Fed Hill, and so I was there for a couple years in Fed Hill. The area was completely different from being in Charles Village. It wasn't very welcoming. They constantly called 911 or 311 on me. And
stop it. For real? For what?
Yeah. Like, they would complain about hair in the street. Like, crazy stuff. My parking. We had an influx in parking. So we took up, I guess, people's personal space. For their permitted space. Yeah. So after doing that for a while, I ended up, I still was kind of unfulfilled. I felt like I was on an assembly line. Even though I generated more income than I had ever generated individually. I just quit. This one day I woke up like on a Friday and was like, I didn't want to work anymore. And then by that Tuesday, I moved everything out of my salon. And so from there, I started like kind of doing like some personal work. I did some, I was doing network marketing before I quit. I was working with a travel company. So we offer wholesale travel. That's what kind of like increased my passion for like personal development and, you know, through network marketing. And then I moved towards yoga. So in the beginning, it was just kind of part time. And because of my religion, a lot of people didn't have education on yogic principles and thinking that it was my religion, that it kind of conflicted. And I wanted to become more educated in my religion. So I stopped doing yoga. And then I just went straight back into it and did teacher training because I wanted to know more about it. So in teacher training, it's like a very intense personal development that you receive as opposed to learning how to position people in spaces. So it was a great transition for me because I learned more about myself than I had learned about how to put people on a mat. And so I did that for a couple years. I was very successful in doing trap yoga across Baltimore and pretty much the East Coast. So I traveled all the way up to like New York, all the way down to North Carolina, doing like pop-up trap yoga events. And then I kind of got, I really dug into like my vulnerability and personal space. And then that kind of curated My Nine Things on Instagram. And so My Nine Things was like a community that it's a safe space that we kind of branded for people to be vulnerable. And we silence the shame and the stigmas behind mental health. And we have an annual event called Brainwash that pretty much merges art and mental health. And so now to bring everything in perspective, right now what I'm focusing on is doing Brainwash and making it a larger event. So making it a 90-day experience for people to come and experience art and mental health colliding, and also expanding my brand Funk and Flow, which was Funk was the name of my salon and Flow was the name of my yoga studio. And so Funk and Flow as a brand is the merge of beauty and wellness. And so we just have an online platform right now. So selling beauty and wellness products.
I wanted you to like tell the listeners all that because I always feel like I got good instincts, but I felt like your entrepreneurial journey was unique to anyone else I've had on the show to this point. And it is because you've done so much in a variety of different things that now you've consolidated all of that into this new thing that you have. And I feel like that's important when people, the culture and entrepreneurship, because I always feel like social media gives people the glitz and the glam. Mm-hmm. And so many times, by the time we notice people or our knowledge of them, we think they just popped up and overnight. When there's a lot of, like you said, there was a lot of transition to where you got to at this point.
Right.
And people miss that middle story. It's like, oh, you know, she woke up one day, 6 months later, she had 20,000 followers and did all this other stuff. And I'm like, I feel like that does a disservice. And it makes the entrepreneurial journey that much harder because people don't, they expect if they don't, they're not an overnight success, that they're failing.
Right. Oh, definitely. I felt the same, even with speaking with, like I told you, the young lady who just launched her business online, who was my assistant, she launched at noon. And so probably about quarter to noon, I had sent out a text message, you know, just like giving her some, you know, just so that she could be excited about it. And she was extremely nervous. And she was crying and it was overwhelming for her. And I'm like, this is a person who's normally not a crier. She's not overwhelmed by much. She's not even fazed by a lot. And so I think in looking at it, we are scared of failure because it's like, what else would you be scared about? Mm. Other than being in a vulnerable space where you are putting something out that you believe to be your baby and you don't know how the world is going to perceive it. So other than those two issues, I don't really see the issue with why people aren't becoming more entrepreneurs. And I think during the COVID, us being really isolated, it pushed us to see more of ourselves and to see more of the spaces and the creativity that we had within us, especially the Black community, and to be able to barter or exchange or to be able to sell stuff that products and services that you are really good at and you probably didn't even know about. And so I think this year is going to birth a whole lot of more entrepreneurs this year more than any, especially in our space, because, you know, when Black people get our back against the wall, we try to figure out a way to come out fighting always. Yeah. So
and
I think it's a great time.
I think it's a little bit of cultural embarrassment. I think the entrepreneurial thing is people feel like if you fail, that the culture is never going to give you another chance. I can honestly tell you, I've done consulting and I've also done investing. I've lost 40 grand in investing over the years, like just making dumb mistakes, but they were learning mistakes. I had to go through that process. I've had a consulting business that went under, a male consuming brand that went under, all learning experiences to get me where I am. And I tell people that openly because I feel like that needs to be fed to other people. The failures need to be screamed louder than the successes. Because 9 times out of 10, most people only have one or two good home runs.
I think we're embarrassed in the middle part, though. Like, the embarrassment is in the middle. Like, and when I say in the middle, like, in the beginning stages, it's fun because you're grinding, you're pushing, you're trying to get people to see who you really are, you're trying to figure out who you are. And at the end is the success story. But in the middle is where the failures come in at, and you don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't know how it's going to end. You don't know how successful your brand might be. And so what you do in the middle stages, we don't try to communicate while we're in those stages. And I think if a lot more people did communicate while you're in the middle stages, it would help a lot more entrepreneurs. But we are embarrassed. I know it's been times, even most recently, like even launching this line called Glowing and Growing, where it's about, it's basically about allowing your skin to glow and allowing your hair and your inner being to grow more. And so I think because I'm scared of what the sales are going to look like or how people are going to perceive me or moving into a space of skincare, which is still a part of a cosmetology license. But a lot of times when people get a cosmetology license, they strictly stick with hair. So I think when you're in that middle stage or that middle area, it's kind of gray for you. And so you don't know what to communicate because, like I said, the future is unknown and the past isn't something that you really want to brag about yet until you've succeeded.
Do you think I find this sometimes when I ask people, do you think in the culture it's we don't communicate enough together because we always see competition as opposed to collaboration and networking?
Oh yeah, definitely. Or I think a lot of times with us too, we want to be the face, we want to be seen. We want to be like, if I'm developing a product, like I want my name and my face to be on the front of it. And a lot of times, I think people like, even like large brands like Kanye and Kim Kardashian and the Kardashian brand, like I think they have made themselves the personal forefront of their brands. And so for us, we're still dealing with a lot of insecurities within our own self. So let alone, you know, dealing with insecurities with yourself, and then you're trying to present yourself to be perfect in front of an imperfect world.
Finance being my background, I always like to go into like the financial aspect of like business and entrepreneurship and all that. Like with your ventures, historically, have you always financed them yourself? Have you bootstrapped it? Have you run that method? Or was it like family and friends investing, you know, bank loans? How did you go about that?
Everything was self. Everything. And so I knew how to, before social media, I think it was, to me, it was easier because I don't know why, but in my past, it was easier for me to fund my own, to fund anything that I wanted. And so the only time that I had an investor was when, you know, my ex, and when I expanded my business, when I wanted to come up out of Charles Village and I wanted to be seen by a different demographic and I wanted to be able to attract a different culture, I moved in a different area. And so when I moved my salon into Federal Hill, he pretty much funded everything that I wanted to do. And this was probably about 7 or 8 years in of me doing things on my own. And so there were times when I had major losses or major hits financially, but to regain it back, I would just grind even harder. And one thing that I had started, this was probably in like 2007, which I see a lot of people doing now, was I started a Funkathon. Now, the name of the salon was Funk, so I called it a Funkathon, where I would do discounted hair, but I would work for 24 hours straight with no breaks, no rest. And so when I did that the first time, I worked for 27 hours straight.
Are you telling me you were taking appointments? Hair. People were just coming in 2 o'clock in the morning. Somebody had an appointment.
Leave from the club. Yep.
Wow.
So I would start on a Friday at 9 a.m. and I would end on Saturday at 9 a.m. And so I probably worked until about 11 or 12. The next day, because it ended up being 27 hours, and I probably made about $7,000 to $8,000 in one day.
You know what I love about the story that you're telling in that portion? Because I was going to ask you about, tell me about, you know, your loss and how did you handle that mentally? But you kind of just covered that with your response to it. Like you would launch kind of like a promo event and mm-hmm. run that to kind of recoup the losses. So your reaction to a loss was proactive marketing.
Yes. And I'm very confident in my service. And so that's what I'm saying. The hard part for me as far as Instagram, which I see a lot of people are having, is promoting their own product. It's hard sometimes to promote your own product. I don't know why. Like, we don't like to big up ourselves, or we say stupid stuff out our mouth. Like, you know, I'm no better than nobody else. Why do you think that about yourself? Like, why do you think that you aren't the greatest? Why don't you think, like, and at that point, I know when I was doing hair, like, I was the best. I offered the best environment. I offered like everything that I did was the best. And I knew that, like, I was using the best product. I offered the best customer service. I offered the best appointment booking system. And so for me, I feel like when you have confidence in what you're offering these people, you don't feel like you're getting over. The person is satisfied with the product and you don't have a problem with promoting. I think we need to have more confidence in ourselves and in our product, whether it's a service or a physical product, or even a digital product now at this point. I think we need to have a little bit more confidence.
That's so keen on what you said. Like, you'll see me on Twitter sometimes, even on Instagram, but mostly on Twitter. You'll see me tell people, one, that I don't know everything, but what I do know, I know, for one. But I'll tell them that I am one of the best financial minds of my generation. I don't care mm-hmm. what y'all say. Like, I tell mm-hmm. y'all all the time. There was something that happened in the market not 2 weeks ago. Like, the market had run up for 10 days straight. Mind you, I'm no Warren Buffett, no Carl Icahn, whatever. And this was a Friday. I told people, and this was like the 10th day, I said, if your investments have run up astronomically over the last 10 days, y'all know I can't technically give y'all advice because of my job and my restriction, because I work for an investment firm. But I'm going to break the rule just to tell y'all right now, because I've seen a lot of Black people doing this. There's a lot of Robinhood has opened up 3 million newbie investments accounts. Majority of them are Black millennials. Mm-hmm. And I told them to sell it all, get out of everything, and recover in a week when the market readjusts. not two trading days later, the market went down 1,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yo, listen to me. When I tell y'all I know this, know this. And I've had people over the years tell me that exact thing, like, you think you know it all and all. No, but I know what the hell I know. And
right,
y'all need to
right.
listen to me. When I tell right. you something, it is a fact. And you need to listen to what I'm saying. So I can relate to what you're saying about people need to have confidence. I think we live in a society, and this is so ironic considering we live in a social media thing where everything's about people and everything's about their image. People like naysayers, or I would say people who don't have the confidence in you, will tell you that you're arrogant, that you're full mm-hmm. of yourself. You think you're better than anyone else. When really, I feel like that's their insecurity shining out.
Exactly. And it's so evident to me. I've done a lot of personal work, through individual therapy, group therapy, personal development courses and classes. So I've done a lot of work mentally, spiritually, and my personal development. And so I like to contribute that to me being very, on top of having like a very discerning spirit, like I can see through all of that. Like I can see through the images that people portray online. And I can really see exactly what they hurting or they struggling, what areas they hurting or struggling in. Which I did want to start a consulting company. Like that's what I was kind of like in the works of like thinking about. Like I kind of played with the idea as far as like business planning and stuff. And,
don't play
you know,
with
drawing
it.
Up some goals, but just as far as like I want to be able to help with like 90-day startups. So I don't I know I'm not very consistent and disciplined with consistency. But I know that I can help people with startups. I know for certain I can get anything that you need to develop an LLC, like to help you with tax information, S-Corps, becoming women-owned small business or minority-owned small business certified, how to develop contracts with the state, whether you for-profit or nonprofit, like all of those type of things that I've learned over the years. And sometimes pay people to do and they don't. And so then I have to end up doing stuff myself. And so I really enjoy those, you know, working with people for very, very closely for a very short amount of time. Yeah.
But stuff like you should do. I mean, if you don't feel like, you know, you want to do it alone. I always tell some people that if you feel like you can't do it all on your own or you wouldn't have the focus, I always feel like, you know, get a partner, someone who right. could do the other portion that you necessarily don't want to do. Because in my opinion, I always feel like I'm good with the day-to-day operational stuff. That's why mm-hmm. I always get partners who like the big picture, the marketing, like to be the face of the brand. I never want to do that. I always want to be behind the scenes because I feel like that's where all the power is at.
Right.
No one knowing.
Definitely.
No one knowing who's actually doing the nuts and bolts, the day-to-day operations. Like, I'm the one they call in when they done playing nice, all right? I gave you him. Now I'm going to do the real one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so if that's what you're passionate about, you feel like you have something to pour into the culture, I say do it. I always say that we all have talents that the culture needs, and some are nonprofit and some are profitable. Like, I technically, right. I give free basic investing advice on a daily basis on Twitter. But when people come to me for one-on-one training, it's going to cost them because I already give you basic stuff already. So you need more depth. So now it's going to cost you some amount of my time. So I always feel like we always have more to offer to each other. It's just we hold back because we're afraid that they're not going to buy it or people going to be like, oh, why should I buy this? And that's another thing I want to talk to you about. How do you feel about, I see this all the time, Black businesses discounting themselves to get clientele? I don't particularly like it.
No. What I learned from when I first started out doing hair, kind of like my mentor in the game, she told me never discount nothing, give it away for free.
Mm.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So this is, and I'm gonna tell you how it works too. It's so crazy because the way that I did it was I would give out free haircut. Now my haircut, like a basic trim or haircut for a woman, would be about $40, right? But that's an add-on service to her getting shampoo, blow dried, curled. That's $60. So I'm saying, hey, you can come in, but you have to get your hair shampoo, blow dried, and styled. So they like, all right, cool. You get a free haircut. I'm not losing out on anything. You know what I mean? My shears already have to be sharpened. I already took the cutting class, but the person has to come back for the maintenance of it. So most of the times I'm giving away, and what I've also learned about like digital content is like, it's like a tripwire. So what is the free, what is the free product that you're giving this person in exchange for something else? So a lot of times the easiest way for somebody to opt into your business is through email marketing. Cool. They come to your email, they come to your page, your website, and you want them to opt in to whatever you give them, whether it's a blog, whether it's a product, service, whatever. And they opt in, they give you their email, but what do you give them? A lot of times we give them, like people who produce digital content, they might give a free PDF copy or a free ebook. But then ultimately, once you get their email, you're pulling them into your world to sell them more stuff, for them to upgrade the services that they already getting from you. And so I feel like instead of discounting anything, I'm going to just give it to you for free. I don't understand when people say, oh, I got this course and it's $97. We offering it for $29 for this day only. And it works for some people, but I don't feel like it works for the consistent clientele. Because now you're telling me that how is it valued at 80% of what you offering it for? I don't really understand that. Like, how do you give somebody an 80% discount? Obviously, the product was never valued at, you know what I mean, like the $97. It must really be worth only the $20-something.
And that's what I never get. Like, because one thing I hate is, like, how people always try to discount the black brands as compared to luxury. Who decides what luxury is? Chanel is no better than an Off-Tour or a Huey brand from Baltimore. It's just the brands have been around longer. So y'all would go buy a $5,000 purse, which is outrageous to me. A $5,000 purse. But if a black-owned brand tells you this shirt is worth $300, I don't care if it costs them $20 to make. They tell you it's worth $300. Right. It's their name slacked on it. You telling them, oh, who they think they are. They ain't Burberry and all that. Who are you to justify that?
Who are you to? Yeah, I get that. And I think what happens is when you feel like this is what it's valued at, I think it comes down to like value and worth, and what do we think something is worth. And a lot of times we devalue our own selves by putting the product out there for a cheaper price. And so it's so crazy because I seen somebody post this the other day. It says a bar of iron costs $5, made into horseshoes is worth $12, made into needles is worth $3,500, made into balancing springs for watches is worth $300,000. Your own value is determined also by what you are able to make of yourself. And so that kind of take you back to what you were saying about the t-shirt.
I'm going to let you know right now. I'm going to use that. That little bit you just did. I'm going to use that to market the episode when it's
Definitely. So the greatest part is what you make of it. And so, yeah, a Huey or Off Tour might be, you know, be on a $12 t-shirt. But people not factoring in the cost of the embroider. Like, I've seen these boys embroider. Like, you know what I mean? And this is, these are additions that they're adding on to it. And they're making it their own. And they're developing a brand. And so it's not just, oh, me just slapping, some screen print, which is also expensive that people don't understand. They think that, oh, I'm just paying somebody $10 to put something on a $12 t-shirt and then they want to charge me $60 for it. But no, actually, you know what I mean? I have to pay for the person I have to pay for the service, and I have to pay for the labor, and I have to pay for shipping multiple times, and I have to pay, you know what I mean? And so I don't think people are accounting in all of those factors. When it comes from behind the scenes, I think they think that, you know, but there are some people that's just out here just taking product and drop shipping, which is also a lucrative business too. Like drop shipping a drop shipping business has been lucrative to a couple of my friends that I also think is a great way to increase in some revenue. But it's ultimately at the end of the day is how you add value to it, and the value is only determined what you make of it. Because if somebody outside, you know, somebody who a hairstylist, you can have two hairstylists that went to the same hair school, but one of them continues their education, she should be charging more money. Like I've taken $1,200 cutting classes and multiple $2,000 coloring classes, and I'm working with $500 shears. And you know what I mean? Like the chair that you're sitting in was $7,000 and these are real hardwood floors. This is not laminate or vinyl. And you know what I mean? So I don't think people take into account.
Yeah. They don't take the, where in real business, in financials, we'll call that the operational cost. They don't take the operational cost into effect.
Right. And a lot of us don't. Like, a lot of us don't. They think that, oh, well, she went to the same hair school as she did. Why does she feel like she could charge more? I've added value to myself, and I've added value to my services. So education is a value that we very rarely see in entrepreneurship, primarily because, like, there aren't really any, it's no certification for entrepreneurship. And so people think that, you know what I mean? Like, but I've added value to myself by spent $1,500 on a digital marketing class.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Like trying to learn UX UI design. So I know how I want my website to look and not just taking a template that Shopify might give me.
It's funny you say they don't take that there's no, you know, certification for entrepreneurship when real entrepreneurs like you and I know that life is a certification. Those struggles, those mental stresses, those crybaby at night. I am not afraid to admit as an entrepreneur, I've cried some nights about I spent this money on this, the business ain't coming in. Like that's the certification, that struggle. And they never take that into account because whatever they're just biased about it, which I think is so sad because I always feel like I'm never going to discount another entrepreneur because I would want the same respect in my regard. Like when my friends launch businesses, I pay full price. There have been friends who wanted to just, oh, I'm going to just give it to you. No, this is your business. You put, you know, I don't necessarily know everything you did to put into this, but I want you to get back what you put into it.
Right.
So I'm going to pay the price. Like I never want to be that, you know, that friend or that, you know, associate who like, oh, because I know you and I knew you before you started this, I want everything discounted or free. For what?
Right.
You paying Walmart full prices, you paying Target, you paying everybody full price, but your friend gotta take a discount or somebody you know. So I think it's just a strange dynamic and mental set that we gotta break.
And if we get back into bartering, like I think bartering is a great, if you don't financially have it, and that's just like with, let's just say me and you, like, I don't have the money, I can't afford you and you can't afford me. And I'm telling you like, hey, well, listen, I'll do your website if you provide financial bookkeeping services for me for 6 months. Or you see what I'm saying? Like, I think instead people were just like, oh no, I can't afford your services, so I'm just not going to receive your services, and maybe I'll just buy Quicken because right now they're charging $1 a month.
I definitely agree with you. Because a friend,
but if we do, yeah, we can barter with each other is another option. I think the only option that we've ever tried was discounted or free services, which we got to get out of our head. So if you don't have the finances, I think just naturally bartering with somebody could help. Or even if I'm telling you like, hey, I can bring you 10 clients for something that you normally wouldn't have 10 clients for. And I'll bring you 10 clients and normally like a workout class. And normally you charge $25 a client. If you charge my client $15, I'll bring you 10 clients. I think stuff like that would help too with partnering and developing, you know, financial strategies for both businesses to benefit.
Definitely. It should work like because all of us have different skill sets and everything like that. For example, a previous guest of mine came on, she came on to talk about Black women in tech and all that. And after the call, she was like, hey, I want to, you know, book your services for a financial thing. Normally I would charge $200 an hour for someone to, you know, get a consultation, but I was like, no, you did my podcast, you get this consultation for free.
That's dope.
That was the change. You did something for me that cost you an hour of your time. This consultation would cost me an hour of your time. Let's exchange it. You gave information. I'm going to give you a free consultation, and that's a fair exchange.
Yeah, even with like cross marketing and cross and cross promo. Like I think what I really noticed, and this had to be years ago. I don't even know how long ago, but I saw Chick-fil-A in the Gap in White Marsh Mall. Meaning like the Chick-fil-A
thing. In the Gap store?
They were in the Gap store and they were handing out samples and they were handing out coupons and I'm like, this combination, the cow was in there and everything. And I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. But the cow had on a Gap t-shirt.
That's smart.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, it's cross promotion, because now the typical person that might come in the Gap who might not eat Chick-fil-A, and for whatever reasons, you know, some people right now aren't supporting Chick-fil-A because they're back in the Trump campaign. I get it. But this was years and years and years ago before Trump was even thought of for being a president. And so I think with cross promotion, I think a lot of times we think if we are in the same business as somebody, or if it makes sense, then we'll do it. Because to me, the Gap and Chick-fil-A had nothing in common. But that also goes back to me doing hair and teaching yoga. Like, having a hair certification and a yoga certification is like, where, like, make this make sense, Lanice. And so for me, it made sense by merging beauty and wellness. And so a lot of times, I think people get seen in a wellness space as very natural, or they're holistic and they're spiritually centered and they meditate and they have like a monk mentality. And the person who is into beauty and makeup and styling and fashion is seen in a total different light. And so what I'm trying to do with Funk and Flow is show that wellness can be glamorized. And this is also a form of self-care. And so I think going back to cross-promoting, I think is great. And it's easy. It can easily be done right now, especially with social media.
I want to tell you, you kind of touched on something. I want this to be the subject we wrap up on. What do you think about cancel culture? And I'm going to give you an example why. Because you said that Chick-fil-A.
We talked about this.
Did we?
On Twitter. We talked about the book.
Okay. So give me.
Briefly.
So give me a thing. I'm going to give you an example. Most people, well, Twitter would know, but maybe most people on Instagram and Facebook don't know. I am a Black Republican. I would be considered a conservative. Now, I say that as a person who, have I ever voted for a Republican candidate? No. I vote Democratic candidates just based off what I feel. Like, there's never been a Republican candidate to pop up yet. But I have conservative views. And I feel like if Black people are honest, we have more conservative views than a liberal view. But that's another day. But that's a whole nother day. But in the era in the last couple of weeks, I'm sure you've seen it. Jess Hilarious was canceled for saying Black people are too quick to cancel people. Imagine that irony. She's canceled for saying we canceling people too quick. Exactly. Dee Simone was canceled for being caught blatantly plagiarizing. I'm not sure if she did it firsthand or her marketing team or whoever she hired did it, but they canceled her. They were trying to cancel Meek Mills the other day for saying something that for supporting her. Like, do you feel like, and this can come all the way back to entrepreneurship about bad customer service and all that, are we too quick to cancel people in our own culture when we allow our oppressors to get time and time again? How many people you know have gotten a bad experience at a Chinese joint and say they're never going back, but they're going back because they got the best yet? Or they go back to Walmart because Walmart got the best discounts. Are we too hard on ourselves than we are on people who have no well-being or no connection to us?
I think a lot of times it's about money. It don't really have any, like, okay, we should cancel Fashion Nova because they blatantly steal our designs. You know what I mean? Like, we should cancel them. But on the other hand, it's like, dog, where am I get $25 jeans that fit like this? Like, you know what I mean? And so I think what happens is it's about money. Like, yeah, we can cancel B. Simone because she's not producing a product that is necessary, that is a necessity for us. And so it's harder for you to cancel Walmart, or it's harder for you to cancel like these big companies because you honestly feel like you need them. But, and it's easier for us to cancel. Okay, cool. All I got to do is block her. I cannot follow her anymore. It's easy for me to cancel her because she's not actually producing anything that is a necessity. It's not a staple for my life. And I think so that's why I'm saying I don't think it's necessarily canceling our own culture, because this is the culture that we're made up of. So this is what we have access to. So if we had the information and had access to what was going in the white communities, or the, you know what I mean, or this Republican community, like, oh, we should cancel this balloon company because they were Obama supporters and we don't want to be a part of nothing like that. Or Black Lives Matter got millions and millions of dollars, and nobody is canceling Black Lives Matter. because we don't know what they're doing. We don't know what they're doing with the funds. Right.
Right.
Like the bailout projects that are only using 20% of the funds to bail people out. Like we haven't canceled them yet. And so I think it comes to like basic necessity or basic needs. I think that's one factor of the cancel culture. And two, like, I mean, like I said, these people aren't really producing any products that we necessarily need for survival. I think, but if we do come together and cancel, we need to actually come together as a culture and decide what we are going to cancel and why, and what is the greater purpose for canceling this. So like, yeah, it's hard for us to cancel Chick-fil-A when we love and we're addicted to Chick-fil-A. But if it goes against what our moral beliefs and what they are supporting and what we're supporting, regardless if you're Christian or not, like we need to stand together and be like, yeah, we're not eating Chick-fil-A and get it shut down. And if you're saying like, hey, like I'm going to cancel certain companies that are building the jails and they want to expand the jails, and you know what I mean? And Whole Foods, Olive Garden, it's, you know what I mean? Like it's places like that, that we can't, okay, I'm not going to go to Whole Foods anymore. I'm going to go to Trader Joe's, or I'm going to go to Sprouts, or I'm going to go to Mom Market. Like, you know what I mean? I think a lot of times it's ignorance too. We don't have the education of the other opportunities or services that could be provided in replacement of those that we don't have. Like, I've learned a lot because of Juneteenth in these past couple weeks and supporting Black businesses and buying Black and things that I said, like, oh, well, I should probably just come out with a Black sunscreen. Because one, Black people don't think that we need sunscreen, and two, we don't use it. You know what I mean? And then I found out on the Shade Room yesterday that it is a Black owned sunscreen company that I'm now willing to support. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying. I just don't think that we don't have the marketing and the advertisement budgets that they have to promote our small businesses. And so, even the other day, like I found like four stocks that were Black owned companies that were on stocks. I think one of them was a bank. You know what I mean? But I think,
oh, Lanice, don't get me started on that. They pumping and dumping. Please don't get me started on that. They putting these Black banks in a bad situation. But
go ahead. Yeah, and I'm no financial guru. I did what everybody else did. I bought stocks with Robinhood. I do have Ameritrade. That I have not a Ameritrade account I haven't used yet, but I'm just saying, like, I think when we as a people, like, we advertise our own and we market our own and we come together as a community and as a culture and as a subculture, like just really coming together and promoting our stuff together, we start bartering again. It's so many, like, if we take this really back to back in the day, like when things had to be built by ourselves and on our own, and we didn't have no handouts and we never received reformations for stuff. Like, I think when we get back to that mindset of building together and collectively, we would be more successful. And it's, you know what I mean? And yeah, we have encountered things like slavery and mistreatment and misuse and not being able to be in positions for our businesses to excel and not be able to receive funding because of the color of our skin or our nationality. And yeah, I get that. But there are also a lot of businesses that are out here that are successful. I watched a girl, she was 20 years old. She made $1 million in 8 minutes.
Oh, I saw that.
We need to have more of those.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know what I mean? Like, we need to have more moments like that. Or even Super Scent, she made $1 million in 90 minutes. Like,
but about the girl who made $1 million in 1 minute, again, it's always about the journey. Most people don't know, I've been following her on Instagram for a while. It took her 2 years of packaging those packages herself before she launched that website
and to make that $1 million. Yeah, and she still was packaging after she made the million.
Right.
She was packaging with her and her friends were packaging together. You know what I mean?
Shout out to her friends for being in the business.
And she pays them. Right. And she pays them.
Yo, they shout out to
them. You know?
Yeah.
She wants to put her friends in position ways, though they don't have to work for white companies, or they don't have to work for anybody else. She, you know what I mean? Even stuff like paying her grandmother's mortgage off, like just stuff like that is like, that's what we are creating wealth for. Like, and that's how it stays within our communities and it stays within our families when we start really hustling for our last name. Because even biblically, it says a righteous man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So when do we start planning for our grandchildren as opposed to just ourselves?
I mean, you've given so much. I will say this to this point is the most soulful interview I've had. Like, I feel like you poured into me more, because the listeners ain't even getting it yet. It'll be a couple of weeks before they get it. But like, I definitely appreciate it. So I want to, as I always do all my guests, I let them have the last word. I want you to say something encouraging or insightful you want the listeners to take away, whether it be about financial literacy, about entrepreneurship, whatever you last little tidbit you want to give them. Definitely drop all your Twitter, Instagram, Facebook handles, give them your business websites and all that. Make sure to shoot that over to me so I can put it in the bio when the episode does launch. And just go ahead, do your thing.
Well, to those of you who don't know me, I'm Lanice. I'm also known as Funk. A lot of people do call me Funk. And I just want to leave you guys with a belief in yourself and a belief in a higher power. I think realizing that you are a resource to a higher source, knowing that you are pouring from a refillable cup, an unending source that never ends and never gets tired. I think when we realize who we are and whose we are, amongst the earth, then we realize the capabilities are endless, and we realize that the sky is not the limit. A lot of times it's just our standing ground. And I think when you get to a place where you are certain of who, you, like I said, of who you are and whose you are, everything expands for you, and not just vision and not just ideas, but the things that you curate and that you co-curate with your creator are endless, because our ways are not his ways and our thoughts are not his thoughts. They're much higher than what we could ever imagine. And you can find me on social media. All my personal pages on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook is Lord Funk. And my business page, Funk and Flow, it is spelled out grammatically correct, which is FUNKANDFLOW. And my website for Funk and Flow is funkandflow.life. And feel free to join us on My Nine Things. We do Monday night Zoom calls where we do, I teach a guided meditation, journal promptings, and we do My Nine Things. So if you have not checked out My Nine Things, then you can do so on Instagram, which is a community that we're co-creating, and we're eradicating stigmas, silence, and the shame behind mental health and mental illness. And I think that's about it.
All right. Well, we would like to thank Lanice for coming on to the show, aka Lord Funk on Twitter. It was a great episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Per usual, this has been another episode of The Culture's Money, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitos, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money.